Hi, I'm Dave Wiskuski, Group President of the Printing Impressions Publishing Group, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's live webinar, Selling Digital and VDP Starts with a Prospecting Plan, presented by Printing Impressions and graciously sponsored by Osei, a Canon company. Before we get started, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console, marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your question to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during and at the end of the hour, so you can send them in at any time. Also, please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all the widgets on this new console do and how to customize them for your experience today. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same audience link you used to watch the presentation today. And after that, the webinar can be viewed from the Printing Impressions website at www.piworld.com/webinar. And finally, we encourage you to tweet about this webinar today. So simply click on the Twitter widget below, and you'll be able to tweet right from this console. So this is the third webinar in a four-part series on selling digital printing sponsored by Osei. And I'd like to welcome back our selling experts, Bill Farquharson and Kelly Malazzi, who are going to help you open the door to new clients by showing you how to develop a prospecting plan. Both Bill and Kelly have sold digital printing and have dealt with the exact same challenges and objections that you face every day, and I'm confident that each of you are going to learn something practical today that you can put into play immediately and help you drive more sales. So without further ado, Bill, Kelly, let's talk about developing a solid prospecting plan.
Outstanding. Thank you very much, Dave. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm doing great. Hi, everybody.
Well, we're going to try and get this in before we get flooded by the hurricane. We're already feeling it coming up the coast here. So without further ado, here's a good look at the two of us. And I'll ask my friend Kelly Malazzi to introduce herself and let you know exactly why you should listen to her every word. Kelly?
Thanks, Bill. Well, as Bill mentioned and as Dave mentioned, I sold digital printing for about 16 years for a variety of companies here in the Chicagoland area and then went to work for one of the major equipment manufacturers helping commercial printers emerge into the digital space. So I've got a lot of experience on kind of both sides of that equation and started my own business and have been working with Bill for about the last 18 months. And I've been blogging for Printing Impressions for about the last 9 months or so and really enjoying that a whole lot, and I'm very glad to be here today. So, Bill, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I also want to just underscore something. You've got to read Kelly's blog. Hers is so much fun, and she does a terrific job on it, so I encourage you to go to piworld.com and check out her blog. Excellent writer. Yeah, there you go. A little love for you. I, too, have sold digital and variable. I started selling back in the early 90s when I should start selling digital and variable back when it was called on demand. And when the equipment first started coming out, I was there. In fact, I wrote a lot of the training material for some of the major equipment vendors. Both Kelly and I would like to extend our thanks to Osei today for putting us on. I am a Printing Impressions blogger and a columnist. My company is Aspire 4, and I am a sales trainer for the printing industry. I've got programs that will help you to drive your sales. So today, we're going to talk about driving your digital sales. This gives you a good idea of what we've talked about so far. You heard Dave say that these webinars are up on the website, and if you missed either one of the first two, we encourage you to go back and check them out. And the first webinar, way back in June, we talked about where to look for digital and variable data printing prospects. In the second webinar last month, we talked about what to say to those prospects, how to do research on those prospects. Today we'll talk about developing a plan for prospecting digital and variable. Next month, on the 20th of September, we'll put it all together and we'll talk about who's making money at digital printing and how are they doing. But today we're going to talk about, first of all, I want to go back over just a couple of key concepts that we covered in the first 2 months. The first one, and Kelly, why don't you talk to us about this? The first one covers where digital and variable data printing fit in the grand scheme of things. So, Kelly, you've sold this stuff before. Where would you position it?
Well, yeah, a lot of that's the big question that a lot of printers are asking and kind of saying, you know, why do I sell digital? What's the purpose behind it and what's the strategy? And really we talk about two things that digital and variable will do, and that's kind of the story that we tell to our prospects is I can increase the value of your documents or I can lower their usage cost. And we're going to talk about the 20-to-1 ratio, which basically says that, you know, for every dollar that a company spends producing a piece of printed material, they spend $20 using it. They spend $20 shipping it, storing it, getting it where it needs to be, and that's one of the really key concepts we need to kind of hone in on when we're telling the story of why digital is a great solution for them. And so we really want to talk about being able to increase customer loyalty by kind of controlling the files and having a good mastery of data and things like that. But again, we really want to focus on efficiency and solving problems and bringing some creativity and some insight to the equation.
And Kelly, you said producing. I think you meant buying. So the 20-to-1 ratio is the ratio between the $1 error represents the cost of purchasing the printed piece.
Oh, right. Yes, absolutely.
There you go. Purchasing the piece. The $20 is using the piece. That's a very key concept that you've got to understand if you're going to sell this profitably. We talk about it in the last couple of webinars, but just keep that in mind that. Where digital fits, it does those one of two things, like Kelly said, and that has to do with the 20-to-1 ratio. There are new rules to customer loyalty, and there were, you know, before we used to talk, back when I sold business forms many years ago, we used to say, you know, if you own the negatives and you own the plates, you own the customer, Bill. That's what the veteran sales reps told me. Back in the early 80s, you own the negatives, you own the plates, you own the customer. Well, now there's three rules of customer loyalty. And this is a great thing to understand when your sales rep looks at you and says, well, you know, why should I sell this? Well, the three rules are this. It's the file, it's the file, it's the file. Your future in this industry belongs to your ability to own the digital file. Again, all these concepts, which were so well received, all these concepts, we go over these in the past webinars. I encourage you to go back over them and take a look. The other question that Kelly and I asked was, why aren't you selling more? What's holding you back from selling more in general? But there's also a digital slant to this. So we heard things like, hey, Bill, you know what? It's the economy. Economy's so down, nobody's buying anything. And the prices, gosh, you know, forget about the fact that there's always a cheaper price out there. I always seem to be the highest price. I can't get around the objections. People tell me that they already have a vendor. I can't beat that. I can't get to the power. There's voicemail that's stopping me. I think one of the biggest ones is time management. It's both amazing to me that someone can sell $250,000 worth of digital print and someone can sell $2 million worth of digital print all within the same week in the same territory with similar equipment. There's accountability. You'll hear something about that today. And accountability, I think, is key. Between Kelly and I, we have 5 daughters, so we know a lot about accountability. You will know something about it, Ms. Malazzi. Get me on speed dial. Then there's killer assumptions. You know, Fridays are lousy days to make sales calls. The summer's always slow. Those things are killer assumptions. In fact, the end of next week being just before Labor Day, for those of you who are listening into the States, that's a day that we typically think, nobody's around. And I'll tell you what, it's a great day to make calls because your competition is thinking that those exact same thoughts. And then finally, there's no follow-up. There's inconsistent efforts, and that's killing us as well. But Kelly, I go back a little bit further in the old days, but you remember when you were selling exactly what our approach was. Why don't you walk us through that old way of doing things?
Well, right. I mean, I got started in the early 90s, and really the way I was taught to sell was you'd call up, you'd find out who the person who made decisions about buying printing was, and you'd say, I want to talk to you about your print needs. You'd find out, you know, what kinds of work they produced, and then you would find out who bought it and when the next project was coming up and could you get on the bid list and, you know, do you have anything I can quote on, you know, things like that. So we really focused on just that shortest distance between two points, which was, you know, you need printing, I sell printing, let's do business together. And if you were a likable person and you inspired trust and confidence in people, you would get, you know, you would get work. There was, it was all kind of the same equipment, and there weren't a lot of choices out there. And now today, it's obviously a much different proposition, and things look very different, and the approach has to be much, much different today.
Such as, hold on a second, I hit the wrong button. There we go. Such as, we need you to stop selling digital and variable. Don't walk in and say, do you need any digital? Do you need any variable? You know, it's one of the great lies that were told to us. We were told that there was an untapped market for digital and variable, and that's not true. Absolutely not true. You have to grow it. You have to harvest it. You have to educate it. You got to find it, goodness sakes. So the new rules also involve solving problems. Solve the problem, earn the order, sell ideas, go in there with a vertical market and say, hey, this is, you know, I've got an idea. You've got a trade show? Well, terrific. I've got a way to help you to make that successful. Here's my digital or variable data printed solution. Think of yourself as a business growth strategist, not a sales rep. Sales reps sell stuff. Business growth strategists help businesses to grow. Which one do you think the customer is going to want to hear in a voicemail? I'm a business growth strategist. We already talked about redefining customer loyalty. You know, the thing about that is that if you've got that technical superiority, that client is going to continue to come to you to the point where, you know, you can even own their files and they have to come to you for their Christmas list. Selling digital and variable also means differentiating yourself through your diligence and professionalism. There certainly is. There's no substitute for that. But it's great. You know what? You've got all this equipment. That's terrific. How are you going to get in the door? Well, we'll talk a little bit about the five keys of getting in the door. Kelly, number one is your favorite, diligence. What's that about?
It's absolutely the most important thing, and we've got a great quote in here that we'll talk about in the next slide, but you've got to be committed to it, you've got to have discipline, and you've got to just accept the fact that there's going to be a lot of hard work involved in getting new business, in meeting new people, in finding opportunities, and being able to match up your solutions and the great things that you have to offer with the folks out there that have a need for what you do. And so we've got this awesome quote from Calvin Coolidge, which talks about the fact that nothing can take the place of persistence when it comes to finding new business and putting a plan in place that's going to make you successful. You can be talented, you can you know, you can be really smart, you can have a lot of education, but persistence and determination are the things that will make you more and more successful as opposed to your competition out there, because you are putting a plan in place and working hard at it every single day, and that is without question the key to being successful here.
I love saying that the diligent sales rep is successful 100% of the time. Kelly, you're doing a bunch of coaching this summer. You must have some salespeople who are short on talent but long on persistence. Wouldn't you say that they will succeed despite their lack of skill?
Absolutely, because it's a numbers game. One of them just popped into my head just as I was thinking is that, you know, again, she's new, she's learning, she makes a lot of mistakes, but this kid puts her prospects in the pipeline every single day, makes the calls, and every week she calls me and says, I got another one. And she's plugging away, and she's working hard, and every day she gets better, and she learns more and more. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm dealing with a bunch of people on the Sales Challenge program. I look at the list at the end of the day of who's checked in. We hold people accountable every day. And all of the people that checked in every day, all the people that have reported in with their numbers because they've made the calls, all of them do well. All of them, 100%. It's just amazing. It's one of the points that we definitely want to get across to you. You know, I know this is hard. As you know, my quote on my website says, you know, if it was easy, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great. But here's the thing. You know, the selling cycle in traditional print is 3 to 6 months. I'm fond of saying that the three most important selling months of the year are September, October, and November. And I believe that because here in New England anyway, you know, we put the kids on a bus just after Labor Day and we say, well, summer's over. Let's get back to work. And our customers are ready to buy. So they're thinking, boy, let's close out the year. Well, this is when you need to put your head down and you need to work as hard as you can, September, October, November, because it will determine how your 2011 ends and how your 2012 begins. But the selling cycle for digital print can be up to twice that. Now, first, two questions for you, Kelly. First of all, why is that? And second, why is that so discouraging?
Well, it's longer for a number of reasons, but the main ones are because there is still some skepticism or a lack of knowledge on the part of our customers about what digital can do for them. So as you mentioned earlier, you know, this untapped market for digital, it's really our job to go in and educate the customers and give them ideas for what they can actually do with digital printing with regard to different software applications and some of the really great things that digital can do. That's why it's our job to go in and find those opportunities and then present them as something that's new and creative for them to use. So that takes a longer time. It takes longer time to get to the power because we're talking about people typically in marketing roles or people with revenue responsibility as opposed to procurement. So it takes longer to get to these folks, but once we create that message of what these solutions can do for them, then things start to fall into place. So, yes, it takes longer, but it's worth it. And why it's worth it is because once you land these customers, they tend, especially if you talk about web-to-print solutions, that just goes, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. And it's repeatable work that's profitable that comes to you month after month after month. That's why those folks that create these engines, that create these web-to-print solutions just love it because it's repeatable work. Once these things get set up, the customer's not going to go anywhere. They're really, really strong, profitable engines.
And you need to hear that because that's the carrot that should be out there in front of you. You know, it might be a lot of discouraging months, but once they go digital, they don't go back. They start thinking in digital terms. You start getting phone calls like, hey, Kelly, it's Bill Farquharson. And boy, you did such a terrific job on that one project. We're thinking of things for 2012, and, you know, you got us thinking. And I want to sit down with you. We're having a planning meeting. Would you come in and sit with us? Wow. I mean, the advantage of getting in at the design stage of the job is amazing. Because now you're designing to your specifications, and you've got that client thinking she's an expert. So there's your carrot. But you got to have a plan. This is not just dialing for dollars. You've got to have a first step, second step, third step, fourth step. You heard us say that diligence is number one. Well, that's great, but diligently doing what? And that's the core of what we will talk about. We do want to point out, you're going to get a couple of opinions on how we think you ought to do things. But just to say, you heard Dave call us experts, and someone popped in the question, well, how do you become an expert? And I don't know if that was a digital expert or maybe the question towards Bill and Kelly Hunch. What makes you guys experts? But just know that the steps themselves are less important than the frequency with which they're applied. Again, they get back to diligence. That's the secret sauce to this whole thing. But we're making a couple of assumptions that we want to point out. Number one, we're assuming that you're calling on the right client. We're assuming that you have got something of value to say. So you learned the lessons from those two first webinars that we put on for OSA in the last couple of months. Go learn who your client is and who your client isn't. Learn how to find them, and then learn how to do the research. You've got something of value to say. All right. Now, if you're not going to do that, and you say, well, you know what, that slide 15 was just garbage. I'm not going to do that. Well, I'll tell you what then. Go ahead and pick up the phone, call as many people as you can, as fast as you can. Just keep doing that again and again and again. And you might want to keep your resume up to date, because both Kelly and I will tell you where this is going to end, and it's not going to be pretty. So, Kelly, what are the components then? How are we putting this whole thing together?
Well, again, the focus is that we want to be creating a plan that has many different activities around it on a weekly, at least a weekly basis, if not a couple of times a week. And it has to be something that we can look to and say, yes, I did these things, they're measurable, and you're accountable to it. So there's goals associated with this. I'm going to put this many prospects in my pipeline. I'm going to send letters. Then 3 days after the letter goes out, I make phone calls. Then I send a postcard. Then I drop by. Then I send an email. So we really want to be focused on touching these folks in a number of different ways. It's not enough just to send a letter and then ask them to call you and then be shocked when they don't call you. Send the letter and then tell them you're going to be calling again to follow up. And keep this consistent and make sure that you're keeping your word every step of the way. So you're kind of leapfrogging from activity to activity that is demonstrating this persistence, it's demonstrating this diligence and this professionalism, but at the end of the day, there's going to be an end to it. So you're not going to necessarily call 1,700 times. You're going to say, I'm going to do this number of things, and at the end of that, I'm going to make we call it the final disposition. I'm going to decide that I'm going to continue to pursue this opportunity, or I'm going to kind of pursue them, but in a, you know, maybe a every 6 months kind of a thing, or I'm just flat out going to give up entirely. And there's a lot of debate about this, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. But again, there's a number of touches, and then there's an end point, and you are, again, all throughout this demonstrating this diligence and this persistence.
So there's three parts that we're going to talk about then. The first part is is called the first impression. What should you do first? Okay. The second part is just what are the weekly activities, the ongoing activities? And then, as Kelly just pointed out, when do you quit? So the first impression, you know, you've got options. Can you pick up the phone and just make a phone call and that's it? Absolutely. We'll also talk about an intro letter. We'll talk about putting together an email and maybe some other options as well. Kelly and I are also rolling out some what we're calling short attention span webinars. These are just really quick stuff that we've done up on my website, and we'll be rolling them out. But one of the things that we did was we talked about the first impression, so this whole talk track as well, just to give you some further detail. Kelly and I both love the intro letter, and I'll let her explain why. Kelly, why do we love the intro letter so much?
Well, there are a lot of reasons that it's a great opportunity, and one of the first reasons is because not a lot of people are doing it right now. Not a lot of your competition is taking the time to write a letter to their prospects to explain why it's a good idea to do business with them. So it's kind of an old school approach. It also demonstrates that you're committed to putting ink on paper, which as printers we should all be still embracing and really putting forward as a great idea. It also, again, gives you that step to keep your word by saying, I will be calling you next Tuesday to follow up with you on this. And there's also a great opportunity to do what we call anecdotal selling, which is to say, I had this particular client, they had this particular problem, and this is how I solved it. I'd like to talk with you about how I could do the same thing or something similar for your organization. So, and Bill, I was trying to figure out the right time to interject this little story, but I wrote my blog about it today. It's probably not even up yet on PI World, but my husband got a really awesome sales letter. He's in the IT world, so this doesn't have anything to do with printing. But this young lady wrote him a letter and sent it with a garbage can with her logo on it, as if to say, look, if you're going to throw it in the garbage, here's the garbage can to throw it into. And what I loved about that, I know, I loved it because it was creative, it was unique, and I tell you what, he's going to see this person. He already called her to say, I'd like to have you come in and meet with me, because her letter, and I go into this in my blog, the letter was good. It had some really good points to it, and it had some points that were not that great. But I just loved the fact that she tried to do something different and talk about a first impression. You will not be forgotten if you do something like that.
Well, I just went online at PIWorld.com. It has not been posted as of yet.
Yeah.
But I will
yeah.
tell you that if our friend TJ Tedesco is listening in, He sent me his column for Printing Impressions in the next couple of months for my input and review, and it's about outrageous selling. He's probably down in Maryland right now saying, please mention it. So there you go, TJ.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah. I'm sure you wish he interviewed you and not me on that one, Kelly. That's a great story.
But yeah, I love that.
And because, you know, we get so much email that the mailbox is open. You know, there's a lot of air in there. So I think you've got a good chance of getting that, getting noticed and starting that process. And really, you know, all you want to do is to say to somebody, here we come. Here I come. I'm going to be giving you a call. The downside to this, of course, is it takes time. You know, sending out a letter, writing a letter, absolutely time-consuming. We grant you that. You're talking to or listening to Farquharson and Malozzi. Or as Dave Lascutz would say, Farquharson and Malozzi. We talked about that yesterday, Kelly. He was killing you. But if you get it wrong, people notice. When you have a simple name, you know it's Dusty, you notice. So if you're going to send that letter, make certain that you get it right. Get the title right, get the name right. It means something to us. It's time-consuming, all right? If you have bad grammar in there, if you got bad spelling, deal killer. Boom. People like me, I guess, notice that stuff, and it means something to me. They're not free, and they're not inexpensive. But there are some downsides to this. An effective intro letter, you know what? It doesn't have to be a Pulitzer Prize winner. My professor at the University of Alabama used to tell me, you know, it's got to be single page, needs to be signed in blue ink, a number 10 envelope. It should be typewritten. You should have a stamp on it, not a meter. He was very particular about these. Dr. B was. And we sent a lot of letters out of that office down there in Tuscaloosa. The three parts of a good business letter. In the first section, you say what you're going to say. In the second, you say it. In the third part, you say what you're going to say. What you said. Say what you're going to say. Say it. Say what you said. Dear Kelly, the purpose of my writing to you today is to introduce myself and my company to you. Second paragraph talks about who I am and what I want. The third part is to say, thank you for the opportunity of introducing myself. And then there's got to be two other parts of this letter. One is an action statement. And the action statement says, this is the next thing that's going to happen. I will call you the week of August 28th, 29th, or whatever. I'm going to stop by. I'm going to put some samples in the mail. See you at the trade show, whatever. The other thing you have to have is a P.S. Kelly, why do we put P.S.s on letters?
Your eye is always drawn to the end of the page, and because there's kind of a break there, it's just what a person naturally goes to. So it's always a good idea, even if it's just check out our website or read this case study or something like that. It's always a good idea to have a P.S.
So what would be a good P.S.? On a digital variable printed letter, what would be a good idea?
Well, like I said, I like the, you know, go to my website and read this case study of a company that I just helped. You know, something like that is a good one. It could be something personal if you wanted to. This young lady that I was telling you about, her letter was infused with a lot of different stuff about her personal. You know, I just moved here from Austin. You know, just different things about herself, which I think are good. You know, again, I think your letter should exhibit who you are. And again, as you mentioned, the action statement shouldn't just be, please call me. The action statement should be, I will be calling you, or I will be stopping by. I hope you'll take a moment to step out, because you should never expect that someone's going to call you back based on, you know, saying that at the end of your letter, because they may not even be reading this. This is planting the seeds to, you know, again, who you are, what you're like, what it's like to do business with you, and what they can expect to happen next.
And we found a letter that we just both agreed was just absolutely terrific. Just thought this was a great way of putting it across. I'm sorry if you can't read this, but I'll read it to you. It says, you know, dear so-and-so, when you go home today and check your mail, pay attention to what you throw out and what you read. It's not a bill. Why are you reading it? Probably because it's personalized, customized, or relevant to you, Kelly Malozzi. That is Farco Printing. That's our business. Helping to communicate with customers or prospects with relevancy. So this letter, I won't read the whole thing, but this is a great way of just talking about why people open up specific mail. And this was written a long time ago. A gentleman by the name of Sean Fitzgerald wrote this. And I always like to credit Sean because he's a guy who came up with a great phrase when he, well, I asked him, you know, to describe in a nutshell what he does and how he does it. He said, Bill, in a nutshell, we help our customers to find their customers. And that was a deal stop. That was like, boom, right there. You nailed it, Sean. That was awesome. I thought that was just a fantastic way of putting it. We help our customers to find their customers. So here's an example, then, of a good letter. And if this doesn't come through, if you want a copy of it, just send us an email and send me the email, and I'll send it off to you. If you send it to Kelly, she'll bounce it to me because she wants to do all the work, I'm sure. So if it's not a letter, then it's a phone call. Phone call, of course, is simple, right? We pick up the phone, we make a phone call. We probably get voicemail. Overwhelming majority of the time, we get voicemail. One of my favorite sales tips says that the best time to call someone and get them on the phone is just before the top of the hour. Why? Because all meetings start on the hour. Call someone at 10 of 2, 10 of 9, 10 of 10, 10 of 3. You're more likely to get them. So phone calls are easy. You know, they're cost-effective. They're time-efficient. There's a downside, not the least of which is voicemail. But there's a little bit of me too, or maybe a lot of bit of me too. Wouldn't you say, Kelly?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because everybody's doing that. And, in fact, I had a LinkedIn discussion about 18 months ago where a buyer, I posted the question, why don't people return voicemails anymore? And a buyer sent me this. In fact, I still have it. I still have a copy of his posting. He said, Bill, I get 60 voicemails a day. If I gave everyone 5 minutes of my time, that would be 5 hours a day just returning calls. Now, Kelly, you had somebody, there was a buyer at a hospital that said something similar, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody says this. And so again, if you just stop for a second and ask yourself, what's it like to be that person? Ask yourself, what would I need to say to that person in order to get them to pay attention to me? So, again, you have to be thinking more of, I can get you the best price per thousand on your postcards, and I bring ideas. I am creative. I am a resource. So be thinking about those kinds of things, and that's the kind of thing that you need to say or that people want to hear in order to want to give you the time of day and to say, okay, maybe this person is worth something. Maybe I should take a listen to this.
I was going to say I'll keep going.
So the third one is email. And, you know, again, as our buyers continue to get younger and younger and technology continues to, you know, kind of change and alter the way we communicate with one another, email seems to be a really logical way to reach out to people. In fact, there was a New York Times article written not too long ago that said that people don't even like to talk on the phone in their offices anymore, and they get annoyed when they hear their coworkers talking on the phone. On the one hand, my heart broke when I heard that, and on the other hand, I thought, okay, well, if this is the way business is changing, we have to alter and adapt to it. So there are some customers that will tell you they only want to communicate via email, so we need to get really good at communicating via email. One of the things that's really important when it comes to writing your email is crafting a subject line that will get attention. So email's easy, it's fast, it's immediate. You write your email, somebody's going to get it in their inbox immediately. You don't have to wait 3 or 5 days for the post office. You know, so again, those folks that tend to really rely on technology and that's the way they communicate, that's the way to reach them. It definitely, again, as one element to this plan that encompasses all of these things, it demonstrates your professionalism and your diligence. And one of the greatest things about email is that it's non-threatening. A person can tell you to leave them alone without having to say it to your voice or say it to your face or, you know, or feel like they're ignoring you. I've can tell you on a number of occasions as sending out emails as part of my prospecting campaign, I've had someone say, please take me off your list. They're doing me a huge favor by saying that to me because I won't waste my time chasing them anymore. It doesn't happen that often. But, again, a person does you a huge favor when they tell you that you don't have a chance in H-E-L-L of doing business with them. So it's efficient and it's effective.
That was me. That was me, though, Kelly. You were pissing me off, I got to tell you.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, Bill, tell us, what's the downside?
I wanted to throw this in there, though. The subject line, if you said, you know, it's really important to have a good subject line. Write the subject line and then Google validate subject line. You ever done this, Kelly?
No.
Yeah, if you go validate subject line. I think it's like business journal or whatever. I forgot what it is. But you can put in, you can copy and paste what you're thinking of for a subject line, and it will rate the spam factor. Okay, it finds certain things in your subject line. It'll tell you the probability you have of that email getting through.
Wow.
Yeah, cool.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So the downside of sending email is it can be impersonal. It's kind of like a letter. You pick the letter up and you say, gee, this is junk mail. Well, an email can be seen as impersonal. That can also be seen as an intrusion. This is less so than it used to be. It's like when somebody calls on your cell phone, that used to be a real taboo. How did you get this number? Well, it's not so much anymore. It's almost just as acceptable, as, in fact, more so sometimes, as calling somebody in their office. So you got to be just be aware of that. I was prospected in a very interesting manner by Centrix, it was, I forget who it was, but they, not that effective, I can't remember who it was. It was a gentleman who was sent me an email. And the email said, are you available this week or next for a brief discussion of your current business objectives? I thought, that's an interesting line, but I deleted it. A couple days later, he forwarded me the exact same email. And he said, Citrix, by the way. And he said, he's going to forward me the exact same email. And he said, I'm still interested in speaking with you. What time would be best for us to talk? And I picked up the phone and I called him. I called this gentleman. His name is Matthew Hayes. And I called him and I said, I'm not going to buy anything from you, but I'm really interested in your process. He said, I have about a 10% success rate. 10% of the time, I get an appointment with that process. And that really fascinated me. I don't know about you, Kelly. I would take
10%. 10% is fantastic today.
Oh, absolutely. So, Kelly, what's next then? Now that we've got our first impression, we've got our digital and variable data print targets, we've sent out a killer letter talking about the value of something that's personalized, what comes next?
Well, as I mentioned, it's just important that until you make voice-to-voice contact and have the opportunity to schedule a meeting with these people, which is what our ultimate goal is in this whole process, is to get meetings and turn these folks into customers. Whatever your first impression is, then you're kind of leapfrogging from activity to activity, and they should be it should be different each time. So, phone call, then a postcard, then a letter. You're just going from step to step. You want to not let more than 3 days really go by in between any of the contacts, but certainly not after the first impression. So if your first impression is a letter and you send that letter on Monday, you should make sure that you're calling by Thursday or Friday, to demonstrate that persistence, keep your word, and kind of keep the momentum going. So the steps themselves, what order you decide to do things in doesn't matter so much as it is that you're committed to doing it, that every 3 or 4 days you're looking at that same prospect and going, okay, my next step is an email. Now 3 days later I'm going to drop by. Now 3 days later I'm going to send another email. Again, until you make that all-important, face-to-face contact.
Okay, ongoing activities such as phone calls, voicemails, email. At what point do I say, Kelly, I'm just going to drop in?
In my opinion, I always do it. If I'm geographically able, I think, again, it's another one of those things that differentiates you from everybody else, that you actually take the time to go in and try to get an appointment. Now, I already can hear, all of the objections to this. Yes, it can be hard to get into buildings, especially if you're in a major metropolitan area where security is tight. But if you put together just a little packet with your business card and, let's say, a brief brochure or some other, little giveaway like a Starbucks card or a scratch-off lottery ticket or a little Fannie Mae chocolate bar or something like that, it's always a good idea. And, again, a differentiator, something that you can then refer to in future contacts. Hey, I dropped that off to you. It also would kind of indicate that you've, you know, again, you've taken that time, but, it definitely tells them that either you or a messenger brought this package by for them. Again, they may not step out and see you, but they might. You never really know what is going to happen. And even if you're in a building, if you have a prospect in a building that you absolutely can't get into, you can get to the messenger center, and you can drop off that package with the messenger center, which, again, says this person is really demonstrating persistence and is really trying to get in touch with me. One of the things that we hear a lot of people say is, well, doesn't that just mean that I'm, kind of being a pest? Well, I suppose you could look at it that way, but you could also look at it as you're doing your job. Your job is to take these suspects and turn them into qualified prospects and turn them into customers. So how else are you going to actually do your job but then to put a plan like this into play?
So, Kelly, let me ask you, do I want to drop samples off? Do I want six samples in the mail?
It's a great question, and two teams that I've been working with of really seasoned reps got really mad at me when I said what I'm about to say, which is never, ever, ever mail samples, never put them in the mail. If you're going to take them, I would never leave samples without having the opportunity to talk to the prospect, and here's why. Without you there to go over the samples and explain the whole story of the project, you run the risk of being judged. You run the risk of saying, oh, they look really expensive, or, oh, this sample isn't very good at all, or I don't know why they would have selected these samples. They obviously don't know anything about my business. And I've had buyers say all of those things to me as I'm talking to buyers about how they make their decisions. So the samples have a place in a discussion, but it is not without ever having met you or without knowing anything about you. And I advocate, and I tell all of my clients this, and again, I get argued with all the time. If a prospect just says to you, oh, send me some samples and I'll take a look, it is nothing but a put-off. They are just putting you off. They're not serious about you. And the response to that is, looking at samples without meeting me or understanding anything about my business won't tell you anything about what it's like to do business with me. It doesn't tell you about how I solve problems for my customers. So please, please, please don't send samples. Use the samples as an opportunity to tell stories. And again, that anecdotal selling, telling a story of what you did for a customer and what the problem was, how you addressed it, and what the results were, is a very effective selling tool. But just sending samples randomly doesn't get you anywhere, and in fact, it might actually hurt you.
I completely agree. I will not be like one of your customers getting an argument over that one. So what do you say? What do you write? When you're putting your process together and you're sending out an email or you're going to make that phone call, the value of the call here comes into play. We said diligence is huge. Well, second then is the call quality. Okay. So what do you say? Well, you go back to that research that you did. This is what we covered last month in the previous webinar. You're going to solve a problem. You're going to help them to grow their business. You might help them to launch a product. You might help them with a trade show. They've got something that's keeping them up at night. Solve the problem. Earn the order. Get back to that first impression and say, hey, I sent you a letter. I'm following up on that. All right. Well, I sent you an email. I thought I'd pick up the phone. Connect the dots, because they're getting 60 to 75 of these similar, emails, voicemails every single day. Then you want to state the purpose of your call. Make certain that the purpose of your call is relevant to them, and not just to talk about you and print and variable and things like that. The goal here is to be pleasantly persistent. Pleasant persistence. I want to be someone that I'd want to do business with. So I'm going to be upbeat. I'm going to be positive. It's going to be to the point where, they're not going to be able to be mad at me, because you think, he sounds like somebody who enjoys his job. I'm sitting at the front edge of my seat. I'm well-rested. I'm persistent. I'm diligent. I'm a decent guy. Also, I'm going to let him know at the end that I'm going to call him again. Why am I going to do this? Because it's a way of saying to the customer, I'm not going away. Prospect, I'm not going away. I'm not going away. I want to get that message out there that, you want to talk to me. I'm the kind of person that you want to do business with. So putting together your plan. We talked about, Kelly and I have talked about, okay, so how do we, the steps are less important than the frequency with which they're applied. And Kelly, one of the questions that I get all the time is one of two questions, actually. One is, when do I quit, which we'll talk about. But the other one is, how often, if I'm on a call, how often do I want to make contact with someone? What's your answer to that?
You know, there's no magic answer, but really the simplest thing is about two a week. You figure if any given week, once you've done your first impression, then let's say you call on a Monday and you email on a Thursday, and then the next week you send a postcard on a Tuesday and you email on a Friday. It's frequent enough that it's persistent, but it's not stalkerish. And again, because this has a finite, you know, beginning and end to it, it doesn't go on forever. So you don't invest, you know, a lot of time and energy over the course of, you know, several months or something into this. But again, the simple answer is about two a week.
Okay. All right. More than that, probably too much. Less than that, not quite.
Yeah.
Not quite enough. Yeah, okay. All right. I'll buy into that. So let's go over a couple of different examples. Kelly's going to talk about her prospecting process. I'll talk about my prospecting process. Kelly, you're up first. What's your plan?
Well, I know you and I are in agreement on this, but I always believe that the letter is the first impression. And so my first step is to, and this is a little bit backwards what the slide says, but, you know, you do your research, you figure out who your prospect is, you know, develop enough of a talk track that you can mention something in that letter that you can refer to, you know, that you learned on their website or through your research or through LinkedIn. So very first week, letters always go out on Monday so that by Thursday or Friday I can make my first set of calls. Now, unfortunately, the U.S. Postal Service is a little bit slower today than it used to be, so you want to make sure the letter arrives before you call. But I will say this, if you send the letter and you call and they somehow say, I didn't get your letter, don't allow that to derail your process. Go press on with the call and behave as if they did get the letter, because it doesn't really matter if they got it or not, because you're putting this plan into place. So you're saying, I promised you in the letter I would call you later this week. Here it is. I'm keeping my word, and just move on. So then in those subsequent weeks, you want to do, you know, two or maybe three at the most different touches, emails, phone calls, drop bys, a postcard. Bill wrote his blog, or his weekly sales tip was all about the postcard today, which is a great idea, by the way, because it does have a 100% readership. So now my big finish and the big controversial thing about my process is that I created the I give up, which is to say, I'm done with you, Mr. Prospect. I almost always do this in an email, and it really works for me now personally. And it's very respectful, and it really refers back to all of the previous things that I've done. It's like, look, Mr. Customer, I've been trying to reach you for several weeks because I have some ideas that I want to share for you about how to improve your communications using variable and web to print. For whatever reason, you haven't responded to any of my connections, so for now, I'm going to leave you alone. Please understand that I am always available to you. You can call me, you can email me, here's my information, but just know that for now, you're not going to be hearing from me anymore. When I was actually tracking the results of this, I was getting 27% responses. Now, that doesn't mean that I was getting 27% new customers because of it, but I was getting, I'm really sorry, I've been so busy, please don't think I'm ignoring you. I'm really sorry, but for the next 3 months, I'm going to be out on maternity leave, so call me in November. I was getting a lot of responses to that kind of, you know, sort of perceived threat of going away. Because, folks, what we need to remember is that we are like white noise to our customers. It's this comforting thing that's kind of always going on in the background, that they know we're always there and that we're always wanting their business. But when we take that away, especially when we're saying something like, I have ideas that I want to share, I want to tell you about a problem that I solved and a solution that I had, and once you say, and now I'm going away, they might actually click with, maybe I do need to hear what this person has to say. So that's why, in my world, the I give up was a very, very effective tool.
And in fact,
Bill, why don't you tell us about your plan?
You first mentioned that about a year ago in a webinar that we did. Kelly, and I remember somebody contacted me shortly after that and said, tell Kelly I was on one for one.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
They were calling you about that. That was kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, anything else on your plan, Kelly?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Mine is somewhat similar. This is something that I've done for a long time. I do research on the company. I want to figure out something of value to say so that when in my voicemails, in my live conversations, I'm leaving that message or saying something, it's going to be the purpose of my call is dot, 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 and that's based on the research. I want to get a good idea. Part of, I think, of qualifying a good digital and variable data printing company is looking at their website and saying, well, how technically savvy do they seem? Because not all clients are going to be great prospects if they're in the dark ages in general regarding just technology. So I'm going to go and do some research. I'm going to write that really good introductory letter. I'm going to stick that on the mail probably the end of the week. Someone asked the question, you know, are you proponents of leaving voicemails? Absolutely. Voicemails, they demonstrate your diligence. They're a chance, they're an audition. They're a chance for you to let the customer know, this is what it's like to do business with me. Let them know just how diligent you are. So, yeah, week two, I'm going to make two phone calls. I make my first round of phone calls on a Tuesday. The only reason why I do Tuesday is that someone told me a long time ago that Tuesday is the best business day of the week. I don't know if it's true or not, but I believed it when I was younger, and it just stuck with me. I make my second round of calls to that same person on Fridays. I do it on Fridays because no one else does. Everyone else is making an assumption that Fridays are lousy days to make calls. Week three, I'm sending out a postcard, and if you want to know why, just read my blog from today. It's yesterday, a couple days ago now, about writing a postcard. And then I make another phone call. Week four, I make one final phone call, and then I make a decision. The decision is, do I want to keep going with them? Do I stop? Do I move on? What do I call them once a week, once a month? Exactly what? So there's two ideas on a plan. You can see they're variations of one theme. Someone else might look at that and say, well, you know what, I don't do letters. I can't write that. My clients are into emails and texting, so I'm going to send out an email. Okay, great. It's very personal. It also depends on the company you're going after. You know, it depends on what part of the country you're in. We're not saying this is the absolute best way to do it. These are two ways to do it. By the way, there are two ways that we know work. But there's three options then. At the end, you stop. You can stop for now, and you continue on an ongoing basis. That's all part of answering that question. When do you stop? Kelly, how do you track your activities?
Well, because you trained me all these years ago, I use this spreadsheet, but it's very effective. And actually, right now, I'm still using a spreadsheet for my own prospecting efforts for my business. But I have all of my customers, all the teams I coach are using Salesforce.com as their CRM, and it's working really, really well to help them stay organized and stay on top of their prospects. But it does, you know, again, it doesn't matter what you use.
Yeah.
You just have to use something.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It really doesn't. I come from a pre-internet era. We just had pad and paper. That seemed to work fine. You can print something out. This is just an Excel sheet that you're looking at, and have your activities across the top, your prospects down the left. Just check, check, check. But the point is, write it down. You know. Now, if you're not having any luck at this, you're probably making some assumptions. One of the assumptions you might make is they're probably happy with their current vendor. What you should be saying is, you know what? They just don't need anything right now. They're busy, but they will, and I'll try again later. Why, Kelly, I'll put this question to you. Why do I want to continue prospecting someone month after month if I haven't heard from them? What's the value there?
Well, again, you know, things might change. A need might come up or something might change. You know, there's always that you just happen to be in the right place at the right time when their current vendor messed up or something like that. But, you know, you always, if you can't get face-to-face time right away, it's good to at least, you know, have your name recognition out there and that you've built your brand and, you know, and that they know that you're out there.
Okay. So I might get an appointment, but if not, I build up name recognition. I've built up, it's almost like driving by a billboard every single day that says, buy your next BMW here. You don't need a BMW. You need any car. But one day your transmission goes, and you say, you know what? I've always wanted a BMW. You better, that BMW dealer better hope that that billboard is still up there. Your clients are going to need digital and variable data printing solutions. That's why you don't give up. That's why the diligent succeed 100% of the time. And you've differentiated yourself with your diligence. That's huge. Okay? So you built that brand, and you want to keep going with this. So to summarize then, stick to the fundamentals. Regardless of the economy, stick to the fundamentals of diligence, call quality, creativity, differentiation, things like that. Be pleasantly persistent in your calls. Make a knowledgeable call, a high-value call, and then limit the number of attempts before you decide exactly how to move on. One final thought, and we talked about this last month. If you can't finish the sentence, the purpose of my call is, without saying something of value, don't pick up the phone. Go back one step, redo that research. So Mitchell Buskowski, that's what we know about the digital and variable data printing prospects. How are we doing on questions?
We're doing phenomenal. I'm so glad you nailed my last name. That was very impressive. But, you know, Bill, as you and Kelly were both talking, I think, you had mentioned LinkedIn, and I know that Kelly's on it as well, and I think social sites in general have become and can be a breeding ground for prospect. And we did have a question about, do either of you utilize LinkedIn, or would you suggest doing so in terms of trying to contact a prospect? And if so, how best do you do that?
Kelly, how do you use LinkedIn?
I do not use LinkedIn to contact a prospect, but I use LinkedIn every single day to network and to do research. So to answer that question, I would use LinkedIn to find out who, but then I would use this process that we're talking about to make the contacts.
Now, I'm the exact opposite, Dave. I use LinkedIn, but what I do is I put in a company name. And I look for, what it does is it pulls the names of former employees so that I can contact them and I can say, listen, I'm making a call on your old company. How can you help me? I found that to be very effective. And I'm also in agreement with Kelly. I work my network every single week. I make it a goal to put out 5 requests for new contact every single week, week in, week out. It is amazing how often I bump into a situation where I am just one person away and I can get a contact. It's great.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I think that the company function is phenomenal. I mean, you can go to basically any company out there, you know, type in a company and hopefully find someone that's only one or two connects and maybe somebody that's actually in your network that works at that company. You know, the other thing in terms of LinkedIn, and I don't know if either of you have done this, but in terms of discussion groups, you know, there are discussion groups out there on direct mail, on copywriting, which, you know, I always find I'm in a couple of those groups. You know, there's a lot of questions going around out there, and a lot of it is good fodder for our industry reps to be in there answering questions, becoming a knowledge leader in those discussion groups, and hopefully getting and prospecting out of that.
Good idea.
And then you mentioned something earlier, and I had a question about it in terms of the longer cycle times for digital and variable, and I'm also wondering that, you know, as being a sales rep that's now, you know, being seen as a solution solver or solutions provider, do you feel at that point that you become as a sales rep, you know, more valuable to that customer than anything that's coming out of the box, anything that's coming off any press, you know, so then you become the asset, not necessarily the press itself?
Oh, yeah, without question. And the thing is, Dave, see, I don't need to know how to run someone's company. I don't need to know the answers to their business issues. I just need to know the questions to ask. That's the key. If I can sit with you and I can say, you know what, tell me about where your company is going and what are your challenges and how do people find you now? And, geez, Dave, can you describe your ideal customer for me? And who's your competition? What's your differentiator? All kinds of questions like these. You sit back and you start telling me all about your company, and I'm going to come up with the best print solution. So that's absolutely a great asset to the customer. Mind just sitting and interviewing them like I'm Lieutenant Columbo.
you don't strike me as Lieutenant Columbo, but that's probably a good place to end for today. And on behalf of OSEI and Printing Impressions, I want to thank everybody for attending today's webinar. We did have a lot of questions about viewing this webinar again, and as I said earlier, go to www.piworld.com/webinar. And as of about 2 p.m. tomorrow, this will be recorded up there and will be on demand for 90 days. Also, if you have any questions, you have Bill and Kelly's slide was up there. You can contact them directly or go to the website, read their blogs. They do, Kelly and Bill have been prolific writers on the website, doing a great job with their blog. So please visit that. And then the final webinar in this series called Who's Making Money at Digital and VDP and How? Is going to take place on Tuesday, September 20th. So wanted to thank everybody again for attending. Thank you, Bill and Kelly, again for some great content. And before you leave, please take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that's going to appear on your screen. This is really appreciated by us, and it helps us influence what webinars and what topics we bring to you in the future. So, again, I'm Dave Laskuski, and on behalf of Printing Impressions and OSEI, have a great day, and we'll see you in September.